Hey Zwifters, and welcome to episode 3 of the Zwiftcast. Lots to listen to on this one. I hope you enjoy it. How cycling and Zwifting dragged Marcus Neal out of depression.
I sort of felt like I'd come alive, so I felt lighter, I felt fresher. I described it as sort of feeling like I'd just woken up.
Zwift Big Cheese Steve Beckett gives us a guide to group riding.
The one thing that's apparent on Zwift is the weakest link is often the person who rides off the front and not falls off the back. Half-wheeling the lead is just not cool. Sudden bursts of pace at the front aren't cool.
There's also some exciting hints from Steve on what we can expect from the eagerly awaited event module on Zwift, and a few thoughts on the upcoming mountain route. I've done some comparison tests on two of the most wanted trainers for Zwifters, the Tax Neo and the Wahoo Kicker.
150 watts, about the same decibel level as 100. 200 watts, about 62 dB.
And we'll meet the voice of Zwift, race commentator Nathan Guerra.
I mean, there's a lot of the same people over and over again, which is great. I love to see the same people coming back, but I'd like to get a bigger mix of people as well.
Templar with a serious 10 watts per kilogram. Holy cow, on this 9%, 10% grade, this is where the race may be won.
Right, a quick bit of housekeeping before we get going. We have winners for our competition from the last episode. Sarah Allenby gets the Wahoo Kicker training mat, and M.W. Elliott won the Ticker heart rate belt. Please could you both get in touch with me to organise collecting your prizes. Welcome to the Zwiftcaster, Steve Beckett from Zwift, and we're going to be hearing plenty more from Steve later on in the podcast, and a lot of it's really interesting and exciting stuff. But Steve's got in touch with me because he's got some really interesting Zwift news related to the Tour Down Under, the first race of the pro season, which gets underway next week. Steve, it'd be useful for people to know exactly what you do at Zwift, so why don't you tell us?
Okay, well, my job title is Vice President of Marketing and Customer Acquisition, which sounds a bit lofty. It isn't. We're a very small team. We don't work in an ivory tower, and we fly over on economy, in economy class. So, and I work with the marketing team, which is sort of flanked by Mike McCarthy, who looks after all our partnerships with pro teams and event owners like the Tour Down Under. And Charlie Eisendorf, who everyone would be familiar with in terms of scheduling of events and group rides.
Okay, so give us the exciting Tour Down Under news.
Well, like I said, we're flying to the Tour Down Under tomorrow, which is Friday UK time. We arrive Sunday. And we're going there because we've got three live rides during the week. Live rides are nothing new, of course. So, but they'll be good fun. Three rides. One's Jens Voigt. Everyone will be familiar with him. Very fun. Q&A, he's an ambassador for the Tour Down Under and Zwift. That'll be happening on Tuesday the 19th. There'll be a live audio feed when you're riding. There'll be a separate YouTube feed so you can watch and listen if you can't ride. And then either side of that event, there'll be two events with two new teams, two World Tour teams, one women's team. So the first one being Team Dimension Data. Everyone will be familiar with them from being MTN Quebecer. And of course, we did an event with them at their team camp in November. So we're using the first event of the season to talk about a partnership that's going to be throughout the 2016 season. And to cut a long story short, everything will dial into Quebecer, you know, the charity to mobilise rural Africa around bicycles. The lowest common denominator there being if you ride with Team NTN Quebecer on Zwift, there'll always be some charitable fundraising component involved, and the experience themselves be quite wow in terms of what we've got planned for 16. And then on Thursday the 21st, we've got a ride with Canyon SRAM, again a new team. Canyon and SRAM, big progressive sponsors in cycling, and RAFA, of course. And that might not sound the most high profile of the events, but believe you me, we've got some really exciting news to announce, and I can't go into any further because it's under embargo. And you won't just hear about it on Zwift, because I'd expect this news to be reported right across cycling media, maybe beyond. It's that exciting. To us anyway. Hope you feel the same when you find out.
Okay, well, that's pretty tantalising stuff. And the key date to watch out for there is Thursday, January the 21st.
That's correct.
Great, Steve. Thank you very much indeed for taking the time to tantalise us. But there's some really useful stuff to know there. And we'll keep our eyes out on Thursday, January the 21st. Have a good time in Australia.
Thank you. Cheers.
Great to see the pro season kicking off for another year. Let's get the podcast proper underway now with a conversation with Chris Parker, and we'll be talking about the latest Facebook group chatter. Chris is the guy who started what's become the biggest British group, UK Zwifters. Chris, welcome.
Thank you for having me. Nice to talk to you.
How has the UK group grown, and has it grown kind of beyond your expectations?
Our first group ride was in March of 2015, and 25 riders were invited to that. So that was the size of the group a year ago. And really, it was around September of 2015 that it really started to grow almost exponentially over a series of weeks. And I think really from September to October, we went from a couple of hundred to over 1,000 riders. And now I think the last 2 days, we've just broken the 2,000 mark. I think the most important thing is that, you know, it's been a very good community and a very easy community to administer. I think I've had one complaint in the whole year. For Facebook and for social media, I think that is amazing. And it's a credit to the type of people we've got involved in Zwift. We tend to forget, having been users for over a year, that there are people seeing Zwift for the first time and they have questions. So those questions are always really easily answered via the groups.
Yes, and that's an interesting point that's generated some debate amongst kind of veteran Zwifters, if there is such a thing. But there are fantastic resources for people to have a look at, without perhaps the need to ask to some people what might be fairly basic questions. I mean, what are some of those resources? I know you've got them pinned at the top of the UK group.
If you go to UK Zwifters, you'll see the pinned post at the top, and that gives a rundown of things like, you know, what are good trainers at the moment. We've got the latest reviews on some of the latest smart trainers and budget trainers there. We've also got James Gill's astonishingly good Zwift manual, and it was great to be able to just dig into that and go and find all the daft questions you might have. The answers are in there, and it's very well laid out, and it's very simple, it's very pictorial.
No, it's an absolutely fantastic resource, and I would urge people to look at the pinned post, because I think it's quite easy to miss it or actually just not even know it's there, actually. Yes. And there's just some amazingly useful stuff there.
Exactly. There's even a link to something called the Zwiftcast, which I think is quite good.
Yeah. Well, I don't think anybody's heard of that. Now, I mean, another thing that's obviously cropped up on the groups is the Watopia extension. And I must confess, when I first saw John Mayfield's kind of slightly obtuse teaser for it, which was a screenshot of underwater, I got kind of a bit worried, really, because I was looking at it and thinking, oh my god, you know, we're going a bit Mario Kart here, and we're getting an awful long way away from kind of cycling credibility, which Zwift has always been very strong on. Having said that, you know, actually, I wasn't disappointed at all by the extension. I think it's fantastic. What do you think?
It almost is a stroke of genius. I think it's so different that it's incredible. And I think generally speaking, to have a flatter version of courses, I'm not a smart trainer person myself. I wish I was. But I know for people riding smart trainers that sometimes they need an easier time of it. So to have a flatter course is a huge advantage. And I think, you know, for their first extension, or their first proper extension since moving from the original island, it's really good. It looks very good. The way the gameplay allows you to change direction and turn down the new extension or go up the main climb, it's been done really well. The usability of those things, the experience is very good.
Now, on to something that's kind of slightly less positive, really, which is profanity in the game. And this has cropped up a couple of times on the groups. You know, I must confess the odd, you know, F-bomb slips my lips in real life. But there's something different about seeing it on screen. And I must say, I don't like it. I find it upsetting to see people swearing on the group text function. Is that a typical reaction?
I think you're right. I look at bad comments in Facebook in general, as well as when you're riding on Zwift, as poor conduct. We don't like to see it. And certainly when you're in polite company, as you say, dropping the F-bomb is not necessarily something you want to see. It's a very difficult thing to police, though. I was looking at a thread on the Zwift Riders group this week, and just a lot of discussion about profanity and poor conduct. Generally speaking, during group rides and races.
Yeah, races seem particularly bad for it, and I wonder if that's kind of the presence of adrenaline.
I think that's probably the case. I find it astonishing that people have the time and
the energy
when racing to actually put commentary up. But I think what I have seen is the groups are really trying to solve this problem almost for Zwift. Mm. I think the best idea I've seen is actually changing any profanity to a Zwift word. So you could say to someone, go Zwift yourself, or don't Zwift with me. I thought that was a great idea.
That is a very good idea. I don't know whether the technology exists to be able to do that, but it's a fantastic idea. It is a great idea. We're now seeing Zwift staffers lead rides, and they're badged and they're marshalled. Do you think this is a precursor to what we might see when the long-awaited events module finally launches?
The Zwift guys have always been very engaged with their users, both through beta and into the post-beta period. They've certainly dipped in and out of the Facebook groups, and they've certainly always been on hand within the game, watching, seeing what we do, riding with people, commenting. And I think really it's one of their trump cards that they've been so open and engaging with their users. I think it's really valuable for them. But you're right, the move to badging of some rides and more involvement in races and rides themselves, I think is them beginning to test out in the background some of their events technology, and I think it's a definite move towards that module being part of our infrastructure in the future, for sure.
Yeah, I do too. Chris, thank you on behalf of the UK users group. Thank you very much for setting it up and for all the work you do to continue to maintain it. And thank you very much for spending so much time talking to the Zwiftcast.
It's been a pleasure. Anytime.
Now, just picking up on the profanity thing, I think it's worth hearing from Zwift CEO Eric Min. This is part of an interview I recorded with him a few weeks ago. I didn't put it in the Zwiftcast then because there was just so much other stuff Eric and I discussed. But here's his view on swearing and what can be done about it.
What we're looking to do is give the community a way to flag people for indecency of some sort. I think having some sort of tool that block out languages has only limited effect, because people can use, yeah, they can come up with ways. You can be mean without using, you know, indecent words.
Sure, and I guess there are a whole set of cultural issues when you're a global platform.
That's right. And this is no different from other gaming platforms. And I would say actually our community is pretty tame compared to what you might find like Battlefield or some of the games that are out there. We will be rolling out some tools. I can't give you the timing of that, but we recognize that this is sometimes an issue, and we want to give people the ability to control it. So there have been some concerns about, you know, children seeing some of these comments. So we're giving you some ways of managing that.
So watch out, you swearers and cursers. You're going to get flagged. Now, the last month has seen a huge influx of new riders on Zwift. Not all of them are hardened racers. In fact, many of them are quite new cyclists. One of these is a guy called Marcus Neal. When he shared his story with the community, his matter-of-fact account of how cycling and Zwifting had changed his life just seemed to strike a chord, and he gathered a huge number of likes on his post. I thought it might be worth finding out a bit more. Let's just start by giving us a picture of why you joined Zwift and what you got out of it, and then perhaps we'll try to understand why your story was so popular. Just give us a bit of history.
Yeah, sure. Well, I was diagnosed with depression a good few years back now, and was put on a course of medication, which, as per my Facebook post, did go some way to sort of taking the edge off slightly. But it didn't really feel like it was... It was sort of papering over the cracks. It wasn't really a solution to the problem. It was really just masking things. After pestering my better half for a while to buy a bike sort of slightly beyond my means, I got out there, and the effects were immediate.
Yeah, cycling works like that. It's I think it's, you know, without a doubt, the single best cure for depression available of any kind. So you started cycling outside?
Actually, it was sort of April, May of this year that I started. And we had obviously had a reasonable period of weather for a while. But it was a genuine concern, because it became, as I'm sure with 90% of your listeners, it became a genuine addiction. I was concerned that the winter months were going to stop me from being able to satisfy that. And that's when I stumbled across Zwift, and certainly made things a lot easier over the last couple of months.
Yeah, I mean, you've had some real tangible benefits, haven't you?
Absolutely, absolutely. It's both physical and psychological. I also have a neurological condition called myasthenia gravis, which, for anyone that doesn't know, literally translated means grave muscle fatigue. And mine is restricted, or certainly focused, on my eyes, which basically means I don't have full muscle control over the direction of my eyes. So it manifests itself in sort of blurred vision initially, and then it progresses to the point where I don't have the muscle strength to keep my eyelids open. It was managed by a course of steroids. The side effects of that, which again I would imagine a lot of your listeners can relate to, the side effects were quite significant weight gain, general feeling of unwellness, and it just sort of emphasised the depression that I was already feeling.
What weight did you get up to, Marcus?
I'm only 5'10", and I got up to 15, just over 15 stone. I started cycling around sort of April or May time. My first ride, I recall very clearly, rode down to my village green and back, which is a roughly 2 kilometre round trip. And I was absolutely spent. to the point of thinking, I've just wasted quite a bit of money on a bike I'm highly unlikely to ever sit on again. Going through the pain, there was also a feeling of, you know, that felt good. That was, you know, the natural endorphins were kicking in, and there was a hunger to try and sort of push myself through that barrier. And as such, as everybody does, just build up the distance slowly. And consequently, the weight started. Firstly, I sort of felt like I'd come alive. So I felt lighter, I felt fresher, and felt like, again, going back to my Facebook post, I think I described it as sort of feeling like I'd just woken up. And that's probably the best way I could put it. It felt like I'd been plodding about for the last few years in a sleepy kind of mode. And the second I did something about it, i.e. jumping on a bike, I just had a whole new lease of life without wanting to be too sensational about it.
Well, no, it's a familiar journey, actually.
Yeah.
You know, not to dismiss your experience, but, you know, lots of people talk about a life before bike riding and a life after bike riding. And, yeah, and that sounds like it's the same for you.
Yeah, absolutely. It's something I actually was aware of from reading similar posts prior to me even starting it, and was very sceptical. You know, it's my thought was that it's not going to work for everybody, and the way I was feeling, there was no way it was going to work for me. I really just did it out for for a sense of fun and maybe escapism, but the benefits were so much more than that. And in terms of the physical benefits, I've now, my weight as of yesterday, actually, after jumping off the bike on Zwift, my weight was 12 and a half stone.
Oh, that's fantastic achievement. Well done.
Yeah, thank you. No, it was it felt good, and I've got clothes that I can now fit in that obviously I previously couldn't, and just feel a lot better about myself. And my whole family have benefited from it, in that I definitely am more alert, more fun with my kids, and just feel like I'm a little bit more present in their lives than I have been for a good number of years.
Well, it's a really wonderful story to hear, and not uncommon, but no less kind of significant for that. And do you think that's why, that, you know, your story, and you didn't pour your heart out, you just kind of gave a few basic facts, but it was an incredibly popular post, and there was so much support for you. What do you think lies behind that?
I think it's exactly what you said. I think it's just that it's not an uncommon story. I certainly, my sort of level of depression and sort of self-loathing over a period of time certainly wasn't extreme. It was something I was able to manage to a certain degree. So there will be others that I'm sure will come across during the course of these forums that will have sunk to much sort of deeper levels than I have. But I think it's the fact that it is so relatable to everybody, regardless of how extreme you feel it is. It's relevant to your own life and sort of how you feel before and after. And I can only attribute it to that it's just something that everybody can sense in their own minds.
Mm. What extra dimension to your cycling life has Zwift given you?
I'm not an overly confident rider, particularly in wet or dark conditions. Again, I think this goes back to my condition with my eyesight, and my night vision is pretty poor, and my sort of speed of focus isn't particularly quick. So it tends to make me nervous, particularly with obviously traffic and anything that can add an extra obstacle in front of that, be it rain, wet leaves, whatever it is, make that harder. So I know a lot of hardcore cyclists out there will be thinking, you know, sort of man up and get on your bike and get out there, which I'd love to do. But it sort of kicked in to the point where I really did fear that over the winter months, it was going to be sort of hang up my spandex for a couple of months and just sort of grin and bear it. And so I was generally concerned that I was going to sort of sink to this, sink back into the lows that I'd felt previously. And Zwift, not just from the exercise point of view, it's the community and the social side of it is beyond any other digital forum I've come across. And I've tried a few. I have to say that 99% of the people I've come across on Zwift have been absolutely fantastic, very inspirational, very encouraging, always willing to help. And I can only assume that's because we all join Zwift for exactly the same reasons. We love cycling. Want to carry on doing it regardless of what the weather is, and I'm only interested in talking if I'm talking about bikes, if I'm honest with you, and it gave me another outlet for that. So it's been absolutely amazing. This is a tool that should really be used to get out every bit of frustration that builds up inside you, every bit of loosen up your tight muscles if you just want to sort of relaxing training ride, but just it's something that brings together all sorts of people. It's a real outlet to see these inspiring programs that these guys and girls are going on, the massive rides they're all doing, and it really just encourages me to go keep going back on and on and on. And it's a fantastic thing. I mean, there are times when I've done what I would consider to be my target ride for a day, and then it'll be 2 o'clock in the morning. I'll flick on the app, see there are 600 people riding, and think, do you know what, I could just put my bib shorts back on, run back downstairs in the middle of the night and jump back on again.
It's funny how we do that, isn't it? I mean, absolutely. You know, I do flick onto the app from time to time and just scroll to the bottom to see who's riding the most and just give a few ride-ons out. I mean, it is an incredibly supportive community, and I think one of its appeals perhaps is the kind of shared experience. You know, we're all riding in the same place, and we're all riding on the same terrain, and we've got lots and lots to talk about, whether you race or whether you're in the sub two group or or, you know, whatever you get from Zwift. Do you do much riding in groups?
I'm just trying to sort of build up the base miles at the moment, but I have done a couple more recently, and managing to hang on to the coattails a little bit better, but the sensation of that is fantastic. And I've not done any group rides in real life, for the same reasons that it's nerves. You know, I don't want to be the one that's getting a taxi home while everybody's 50 kilometers ahead of me. So to be able to do that with a level of anonymity in Zwift has been fantastic. And the chatter within game, the Facebook posts afterwards of sharing images and sort of the individual battles that are going on within the groups, even if it's not a race, it's just a casual ride. There's always, you know, there's always something you want to get. You'll pick up on a name that's consistently a certain distance ahead or behind you, and you focus on a battle with that particular person, and it's just fantastic. It's opened up a whole new level of cycling, as far as I'm concerned.
Marcus, I think you've encapsulated you know, a lot of the features of Zwift that people find so appealing at every level of cycling, and I think that's why I wanted to bring somebody like you onto the Zwiftcast. You know, you're not a racer, you're an ordinary cyclist, but there's lots and lots of ordinary cyclists out on Zwift, and I think you've spoken extremely well on their behalf, and it's been a pleasure talking to you.
Oh, thank you. No, it's been my pleasure. I was delighted to be invited to come on, because it's something I do feel more and more strongly about, because of how it's making me feel. And if we can make more and more people aware that it can definitely do that for you, then fantastic. I'm happy to help in any way I can.
What a nice man, and what an uplifting story. It was good to hear Marcus saying he'd now got enough confidence to start to join group rides. And that's the subject of the first part of my interview with Zwift insider Steve Beckett. Welcome to the Zwiftcaster, Steve Beckett, who's a Zwift staffer and will have become a familiar name in recent weeks because he's been ride leader on more than a few occasions on some of the group rides. Now, we've seen some changes to group rides in recent weeks. Zwift appears to be kind of taking them under its wing a little bit more and making them kind of official. They've had gradings and they've had badges attached to them. And often we're now seeing ride leaders who are a member of Zwift's staff. What's the thinking behind this?
It's definitely not taking group rides under our wing. You know, what we've seen is a huge uptake in group rides, and group rides being organised by the community is something we want to champion all the time. So I think, you know, Zwift getting stuck into group rides is about putting ourselves in the place of the customer, getting amongst it properly to understand the challenges. There's been so much community chatter around group rides and how we develop this side of Zwift. So we need to show we're listening, and the best way to do that is taking part. And it's you know, it's a great opportunity to ride our bikes as well. You know, we work long hours, and it's quite often hard to ride our bikes when we work so hard. You know,
it's a bit of a perk of the job.
Well, it isn't a perk of the job, but it's becoming a perk of the job. So I'd say official is about sticking our neck out. It's about being more visible, accountable, and also at the same time trying to lead by example and educate race standards around group riding, you know.
And I'd like to get onto that, because, you know, those of us who ride for clubs or with clubs out on the road are reasonably familiar with group riding etiquette. But people perhaps who are not club members or who ride solo and are not so familiar with group riding etiquette, the thing is, it's just as important in Zwift as it is in real life, arguably a little bit more so.
I think that's probably because it's easier to respect a group of friends than it is to respect a group of strangers. You know, and often when you come into Zwift, you're surrounded by a lot of strangers. You know, and but the bottom line is always about communication and working as a team. And the one thing that's apparent on Zwift is the weakest link is often the person who rides off the front and not falls off the back. Half wheeling the lead is just not cool. Sudden bursts of pace at the front aren't cool, you know, and nothing beats the feeling of a group being organised and riding in unison. So there's certainly a lot of commonalities about riding outside, but as far as Zwift is concerned, it's really about yeah, respecting a group of people in the first instance are often strangers, not your friends. But on the same token, etiquette's about leading rides correctly. You know, if you say you're going to ride at a set pace, you've got to ride at the set pace. And then it's about listening to the leader and respecting his or her commitment to want to lead rides. And, you know, the people I think of on Zwift, I did a few of the Lawrence 10 Dam rides, and he's pretty disciplined about how he runs a ride. He knows all his regulars, and he talks to them. But also you'll call people out for riding off the front. All of a sudden, you kind of instigate this culture of, like, if you're not respecting the leader, that's really disrespectful, and it's just not cool.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you've got to lead by example and be really firm. And it doesn't matter if you're a member of Zwift staff or not. You shouldn't mince your words. I mean, there's a few things at play here. So if you're communicating on a keyboard, you've got to be really succinct and really clear. And if someone's being a persistent offender on a group ride and you call them out, it doesn't mean that it's a character assassination on them. It's like saying, come on, Simon, you're going too fast here. Just respect, yeah. Just ease it in,
One thing I've noticed is that when group rides are led by a Zwift staffer, and I've done several of the rides that you've led, there does seem to be slightly more respect granted to them, and they do seem to have a little bit more authority than other group ride leaders.
Yeah, well, there's probably a few things at play there. First of all, like, if we weren't prepared and we led group rides, then they wouldn't work and we'd look a bit silly, right? So there's probably a bit more rigour and preparation that goes into group rides from Zwift. But, I hope people believe we're leading by example. You know, should always treat others as you'd want to be treated by yourself. And I think, I forget Zwift. You know, I've always been interested in group rides. I've got, clubs that I ride with. It's quite an informal club, and we're really into that group riding, and social aspect of it. And, a few years ago, I was at Sky, and I was responsible for their cycling project, which was had lots of shiny things associated with, like, Team Sky and a partnership with British Cycling. But the thing that I enjoyed the most was our staff engagement program and getting people on bikes for the first time, taking them around the park, and learning how to ride in a group. And, like, the thing about cycling is it's grown so rapidly in such a short space of time, and attracted people to cycling who are sporty or want to get into sport, but they don't really have an appreciation of everything that goes with riding in a group. You see it on the open road in sportees, right? You know,
yeah.
And say, look, ride two abreast, you go, 10 miles out, and people are all over the place. And standards aren't going to improve unless you call people out. But at the same time, that also means encouraging. But if you're actually doing things properly yourself, then people will look to you and say, I respect that him or her for doing things properly. And that behavior then permeates through the group you're on. And then when people are out doing other group rides, it kind of permeates more and more, So hopefully, what we're going to do as part of this is encourage others to take up the mantle. Group leaders should be a rewarding thing to do, and it should be a respected position. So we're putting our thinking caps on at Zwift about how we recognize ride leaders.
Now, I'm going to push you on this because there is an enormous amount of interest in it in the Zwift community, and it's obviously closely related to group riding. Can we expect the event module, which really is eagerly awaited, can we expect that to offer an improvement to the group riding experience?
Yes. So, right, for sure, the event module's on its way. But, to be clear, it's about group riding and not racing. Okay, so the development of the events module is focused on that. There's no doubt the community will appropriate it for racing, just like you have at the moment now with the Tuesday Night Worlds. But, Zwift is focused on the group rides and developing the product specifically for all abilities and need states and, time zones. Racing can be pretty cool, but it's really very niche as far as Zwift are concerned. And, like, when we promote Zwift as being social, group riding should be the reference point. And, on paper, it should be the perfect introduction and first experience for being for for being a Zwift user.
What can you tell us about what's likely to be in the event module?
All right, well, I don't think it's rocket science, you know. It's probably looking at a two-stage approach to event module. So there'd be a release late Jan, early Feb, and then hopefully one later around March time. The simple task is how do you find a group ride? How do you enter it? And actually having a greater choice of rides. So, you know, that means probably, you know, how we integrate mobile. And then in terms of like entering rides and events, how therefore your friends find out, you know, it'd be very, very, very nice for me to know when you're doing a ride, Simon, because I often ride with you and I know we're kind of like equivalent standards. So, but, you know, I shouldn't have to do that by emailing you, texting you, shouldn't I? It should be a much more smoother and intuitive process than that. And of course, you know, rides have a start area. At the minute, we rock up on the start line in Watopia, and to all intents and purposes, that's like in the middle of a road, you know, and we want to assimilate group riding in Zwift just like the outside world. And there's nothing better than kind of pinning a number on your back and being in a starting pen. So that, you know, that's something we're looking on. And of course, I think, you know, people who ride on Richmond will be sympathetic to the fact that it's not easy to warm up before a group ride as well. So we'll be looking at how you can actually warm up as part of that experience. I think there's some real basics around the ride leader. Okay, so like it's very hard to see a ride leader on the rider list and actually in a group when you've got lots of people there. So we're thinking about how you manage the heads-up display around the ride list on the right-hand side, and then actually what can be the visible cues within the game to actually make the ride leader more visible. And then there's actually the whole communication angle as well. So how we make that a better experience for a ride leader in order to communicate with the group, and how that communication is more easily digested by the people riding.
Do you think the first release will feature any kind of facility where the rider's nearby board is filtered to only show people who are on the group ride?
Yeah, absolutely. That's something we're looking at. So I hope that we'd be able to deliver that in the foreseeable future. It's something you'd expect, right? It's probably a put that in the basic requirement or basic hygiene around what you'd expect in group riding.
That's all good and interesting stuff, Stephen. As I say, it's eagerly awaited, and I'm sure people are going to be very excited when it's released. It's only weeks away. I can't wait. I've got more with Steve later in the Zwiftcast. He kindly agreed to me firing some questions at him in areas that weren't really on the radar for this interview, and there's a few really tasty nuggets in his responses. That's coming up later. Now, I think it's probably fair to say that the two most wanted trainers by Zwifters are the Wahoo Kicker and the Tax Neo. These are very expensive pieces of kit, and not everybody can stretch to them. But I've ridden a Kicker on Zwift for more than a year, and recently I decided to get a Neo. There was a crossover period of a couple of weeks when I had both trainers, so I thought it might be interesting to do a compare and contrast review. I can't cover every aspect of each trainer. James Gill's review on Titanium Geek is very comprehensive, and I'd strongly recommend it. But I would say that these are both excellent trainers, which are superb machines for Zwifting. I'm going to take a look at two aspects: the noise that each one makes and how each one responds to gradient changes in Zwift. I'll also range over some of the small quirks of each trainer, especially how they react going downhill. And we're going to hear from Wahoo and Tax on why they think you should go with their product. Let's start with the Neo, and I've rigged up a fairly good decibel meter to give us a sense of noise levels.
Okay, so I'm on the trainer in my pain cave, which is a fairly quiet room. So I'll just see what decibel level that's giving us without me speaking. That's about 48 decibels, which my decibel meter is calling quiet. Okay, so we're on the Tax Neo, and I'm just going to cruise out and give you a reading by decibel, and you'll probably also be able to hear the noise of the trainer. So this is about 50 watts.
So what I'm going to do here is flip between the Neo and the Kicker. Same room, same recording setup, same section of track. Neo first, then the Kicker, starting at 50 watts and gradually increasing power.
Decibel meter's reading about 58.
And this is the Kicker now.
50 watts, we're up to 55 decibels. 100 watts, it's about 62. Okay, now it's 100 watts and it's around about 60 decibels. Now it's about 150 watts and it's reading about 65. Most of the noise is chain noise. 150 watts, about the same decibel level as 100. So wind it up to 200 watts. Around 67 decibels. 200 watts, about 62 dB. Up to 250. About 68 decibels. 250. 62, 63 dB, and up to 300 watts. And it remains the same at about 68 decibels. And we're now at 300 watts. And it's up to about 65.
Interestingly, the Neo rated higher than the Kicker on the decibel meter through most of the test, but what you hear quite clearly is that the nature of the noise is different. The Kicker's sound is higher pitched, it's more of a whine compared to the Neo's low rumble, and to me, that's more intrusive. There are ways to mitigate that on the Kicker if you're in erg mode, by using the inner ring for instance, but most of the riding I do is racing or group riding, which is in sim mode and needs gear changes. So for me at least, the Neo wins out. When I'm racing or pushing hard and I've got a fan running, I'm simply unaware of the Neo's sound, whereas I can always hear the Kicker, and to be honest, sometimes that's just a bit irritating. The differences may not matter to a lot of people, and you are paying a premium for the Neo, but for some people, it will be worth it. Now let's hear from the companies. I gave both Tax and Wahoo the chance to do a short pitch for their trainer. First, Kevin Abt, a marketing big cheese from Wahoo.
First, Wahoo pioneered smart trainers. This was a product category that didn't exist 3 years ago. So again, with Wahoo, you're going with the original creator of this category. Two, when you look at the Kicker and the Snap, they both have a flywheel. They both have a heavy flywheel that's on the device, and that's what provides the realistic road feel. And we like to say that you can't fake physics with a computer-controlled electric motor. Our flywheel approach provides the ability to accurately replicate what it feels like when you're first beginning to pedal the bike, and also the flywheel continues to spin once you stop pedaling to provide that realism of coasting, and that realistic road feel makes a huge difference. One of the other things that we hang our hats on is the quality of the material. When you look at both the Kicker and the Snap, there's no plastic involved. This is high-grade carbon steel. This product is heavy, which is a good thing. It gives you that stability, and it's really built to last. And the final piece is the connectivity. So with the Snap and the Kicker, Wahoo created our own proprietary Bluetooth Smart or Bluetooth 4.0 trainer protocol for two-way communication. It's nice when you buy an iPhone or an iPad, you don't have to buy a separate dongle or an attachment that you have to plug in to the Lightning connector or the 30-pin connector of your phone to get an ant plus quality signal. So less hassle, direct connection, and it's a, as I said, it's a protocol that was developed by Wahoo, and it's something that we've been fine-tuning for the last 3 years, and it's been widely adopted in the market.
Well, that's a really confident performance from Wahoo. They're only needing 4 of the 5 points, and I'm just going to quickly summarize what those 4 were. That is, we're the pioneers in the smart trainer category. We've got the best road feel, we've got the best build quality, and our connectivity is better than anybody else's. So, over to Mr. Tax.
And Mr. Tax is Sven Roggeveen, who's also a marketing man.
Let's hear the 5 reasons from Tax why the Neo would be the best choice for the consumer looking for a high-end trainer.
The Neo Smart is by far the most silent trainer on the market. I think that one is simple. We're the first training company to utilize the N Plus communication platform many years ago. This is the protocol used today by many software developers to create apps for the cycling industry. And it is the only open standard protocol that is certified by N Plus itself. And we developed their own open protocol over Bluetooth as well, that is open and being used by developers to set up an interactive communication between the Neo and any phone or tablet. So to make a long story short, the Neo is open and fully connected, and it responds very quickly on gradient differences. And furthermore, you can choose if you want to plug your Neo into the power grid or not. When you use power, it simulates downhill as well. So that's the electronic part. We also can simulate a flywheel of even 125 kilograms because it's controlled by firmware, and the heart of the Neo is very intelligent. Furthermore, the Neo measures 1,000 times per second how you pedal. That's the reason that it is accurate, but allows you also to have a smooth pedaling. Then point 4, the Neo doesn't have to be calibrated because there are no internal transmissions like a belt, for example. This means that the power readings of the Neo are very, very accurate, within 2%. And number 5, we invented the electronic controlled indoor training 20 years ago. We're very experienced in pioneering electronics in cycling.
That wasn't a great line, I'm sorry about that. So here's a quick summary of Sven's points. The Neo is the most silent electronic trainer. Tax is fully connected on Ant Plus and Bluetooth. The Neo responds very fast to gradient changes, and its 1,000 calculations a second make it a very smooth trainer. There's no need to calibrate, and it measures power very accurately to plus or minus 2%. And finally, Tax invented the electronic trainer 20 years ago, so they can be trusted. I wanted to pick up on one of Sven's points and test it. The speed of response to gradient changes is really important for a trainer used mainly on Zwift. We want resistance to match terrain as accurately as possible. So I rode through the S's section on Watopia on the Neo and the Kicker to see how they both performed. First the Neo, and I started on a downhill section to experience the powered descent feature.
The Neo is powering me downhill. I've stopped pedaling and my speed is increasing. Okay, my speed's beginning to decrease, so I've started to pedal again. We're now rising, we're at 2.8%, and immediately I can feel the resistance has changed. 2.3% resistance on, 1% resistance off.
It's a challenging section of the course for trainers, but the Neo handled it perfectly. Its response to gradient changes was instant, faultless. Now the Kicker.
In the valley now, up goes the resistance, and the Kicker bites, 3%, no delay there at all. Over the top of a roller, a slight delay.
I've had much more experience on the Kicker than the Neo, and there have been times when I've seen the Kicker slightly out of sync with the terrain. In these tests, I saw a tiny delay, and I mean tiny, on one or two of the rollers. most people probably wouldn't even notice it. But if I had to come down on one side or the other on responsiveness, I'd probably give it to the Neo. But the difference is fractional. And the frequent firmware updates from both companies mean that these issues are addressed constantly and often improved. So if you're in the happy position of choosing between the Kicker and the Neo, which should you buy? To an extent, it depends on how you use Zwift. This is just my take. I race a lot, and I think the Neo works a bit better in races. I don't get dropped so much on the crest of hills anymore, because on the Neo, I don't have to spin up a big heavy flywheel like I did on the Kicker. The powered descent gives me a tiny breather on downhills if I'm right on the rivet. But in races, you still have to hammer down descents for fear of losing the pack, so I don't get that luxury that often. I don't get what I call the Kicker surge on the Neo, when you get gapped downhill, but as the road flattens or rises, the Kicker delivers a huge power surge, which helps you get back on if you've been dropped. The Neo seems to deliver a more even power level over gradient changes. I think the Kicker has a better build quality. It's so solid and robust, whereas the Neo's got a lot of plastic. The Neo has had some problems with early production models developing faults, and although Tax has been responsive in sorting these out, it is a worry for potential owners because it's a massively expensive bit of kit. Both of these trainers are brilliant. If you get either one, you'll enjoy Zwift on a different level. Which one? That's your choice. I hope this has helped you make up your mind. Right, let's go racing.
Looks like we've got SG from Team DZI coming out of Great Britain, putting on an attack. C. Weideman, who is the organizer, has covered that attack from X1.
We welcome to the Zwiftcast to the famous, team, in fact, legendary Nathan Guerra. Nathan, a lot of people will have heard your awesome commentary, but I gather you're also a pro rider. So why don't we just start by you telling us a little bit more about yourself, please?
So I race Revision Cycling, which is a company that I actually started. And so I race as a professional. I'm currently ranked number one in the USA with USA Cycling Rankings.
Okay. I didn't realize you were quite that good, Nathan.
It's been a challenge to make a business out of it over time and kind of entrepreneur myself into pro status financially, but at the same time getting results too, and just kind of proving myself over a long haul.
Now, I mean, you're obviously well known in the States, but you're probably better known globally as I think, you know, I think we can now call you the voice of Zwift. The voice of Zwift commentary.
Francis Coppix, Casey Shum, this is a strong, strong group of riders today. A lot of the big hitters have shown up.
How did the commentary thing start?
I was playing video games and riding my bike in winter for up to 5, 6, 7 hours while laying down base miles. And then when Zwift launched, at that point when I saw that and I got into the beta, I said, okay, now it's time to start streaming for real, because there's an actual game that I'm playing that's actually the riding too. And so, and then once I started live streaming on the Twitch channel, so for those of you who are new to what is this guy talking about streaming, twitch.tv/NathanGuerra is a place where I actually live stream all of my riding. And that was getting a little bit of attention, and you know, that was fun and everything. But at the same time, it was just me kind of riding along, and people come and join me, and creating a community around live streaming is kind of the cool thing about it. That's kind of the whole niche with Twitch, is that you create a community around your gaming and you're just having fun with your buddies while live streaming it. Well, at that point, I wanted to start kind of growing the community through. It's not just about me and not just about my riding, but I think that there's a bigger grab with Zwift, that it's about everybody's riding, you know, and everybody together. It's events like the Zwift training races. It's events like what we'll have in the future, I think, with some of the race modes and stuff that Zwift's going to bring along, that really, I think, ignited in me that I want to broadcast these things. I want to make it more than just about me and my riding. And I guess that's kind of always been my heartbeat. It's going to be more than just the Nathan Guerra show.
very fast. There's the group from the helicopter view. What a great view of the island that we've got here. Looking at the front, it's still a large group. I mean, look at how many we have here. 12 riders in this group. Are they all a part of this front group? I believe so. I think on the back here was Sidel Sin, one.
Cycling fans usually have a lot to say about cycling commentators, and not all of it's that good, to be honest. But, you know, I think you're really good. I think you're really good at it. Did you have any kind of experience, or do you just kind of say what you see?
I have a good speech background and good inspirational speaking background in public. And so anytime I give any kind of presentations on ideas or teachings, I've got a good background there. But no, I have no commentary background in that respect. To be honest, I watch my replays to try and get a good handle on how I'm doing. And I cringe. I cringe a lot, actually. and I'm still learning, and I'm still trying to get it right. You know, if this continues to grow and continues to go somewhere, I mean, how far into this am I? I've only been commentating these for maybe 2 months. I think as we release more and more modes and different kinds of races, and as we get more features in game, it will really open it up and also get new players and do other. I mean, there's a lot of the same people over and over again, which is great. I love to see the same people coming back, but I'd like to get a bigger mix of people as well.
Templar with a serious 10 watts per kilogram. Holy cow, on this 9%, 10% grade, this is where the race may be won, putting on this monstrous effort. Hansen on it, Kopics on it, on it, on it. The gap has been created. Kopics, Hansen, random Thompson, we don't want you in there right now. Sorry, Thompson. No offense.
Now, you see a lot of the strong riders on Zwift, you know, and the strong riders on Zwift are strong riders, full stop. I mean, they just are, aren't they?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. You know, regardless if there's a little percentage off here or there, I mean, we're not talking about, no matter what, the level is Cat 1 plus. You know what I mean? That's for sure. If you're riding at the front end of the A group and you're able to hang with that group all the way through, it's Cat 1 plus for cyclocross race or better, because it is only an hour, you know, and so it does give to allow everyone in who can race for shorter distances and kind of just throw down for that a long amount of time. I'm excited to see if we ever have something that starts pushing into that longer 2 to 5 hour range. You know, my range for cross country racing is an all out effort for 1.5 to 2 hours. Then you have road racers that like 3 to 5, you know, and then up to tour riders, which is a totally different story. So we haven't seen anything in the racing world of Zwift yet that would really lean toward anything but those who can just hammer an all-out one-hour pace.
Yeah, it's a crit race, isn't it, really? It's a crit
essentially,
race.
Yeah, essentially.
Nobody wants to take the front. Here comes Templar with a 7 watts per kilogram. Oh, when is the move going to be made? It's got to be made soon. There's less than a minute to the finish line. Less than a minute to the finish line here. Templar on the front. Here we go.
These races are incredibly competitive, and you hear people saying it's just a game, it's just a game. Well, you know, if you're in one of those races, it's more than just a game, which opens up this issue of, you know, how fair is the racing on Zwift? And I know it's a tough question to answer, but I'd love to hear your view on it.
It is just a game for some. It isn't just a game for others. With a lot of us, it doesn't have anything to do with trying to prove something for ourselves. And I think people are taking it incorrectly and just aren't seeing it in the right light, that this isn't about me trying to prove that my numbers are right compared to someone else. In the moment, yes. At the moment, when I'm absolutely suffering at 180 beats per minute, I'm giving everything I can, and I look at that screen and I go, this better be believable because I'm giving everything I possibly can right now. And it gets a little frustrating if it isn't. But at the same time, on the bigger picture, it's about moving a platform forward that could do something really, really amazing in an online virtual venue that's accessible to the entire world instantly. That is absolutely amazing. And to move that kind of a venue forward with verifiable data is good for all the whole community, I think. From a from just a basic rider point of view, that you should have good numbers just for your own personal training and not be going off of false numbers for your own personal training and have false expectations, etc. But also so that we can have a competitive environment to push each other along with real numbers, and somebody doesn't race all year in Zwift all winter season in Zwift and then come out and get whooped on pretty good because they thought they were something that they were not that entire time. So it's good for the individual, it's good for the community.
Looks like Copic's on the front, has a slight gap. PK setting up at 10 watts per kilogram. Templar with a serious effort. Oh my goodness, look at this. Take that. Oh, Copic's just barely, I think, got nipped at the line. It looks like it was Templar, Copic's, and then PK and Hoskins in that front four. Here comes C.
Because we're not giving away money. We're not giving categories away. There isn't rankings going on that are super serious at this point. And I think that as we go along, that it's going to take a lot of time. And the process is going to be slow and steady as new features are added to verify power data from the mechanical side on each user's end, to verify weight in different kinds of ways. And as those features get added, I think that we can get more and more serious. But until then, it's just for fun, and we should all be using power-ups every time.
But listen, when you're commentating, and this is a naughty question, really, but when you're commentating and you see an obvious flyer, are you ever tempted to call them out?
I do once in a while. I mean, I do say that looks inaccurate during the ride, and I got a little pushback on YouTube recently from a rider, and I'm not trying to shame anybody, and I try to be as graceful as I possibly can with it to say, well, I think that maybe they should look at their setup and just get it correct so that everybody can ride together correctly, you know, in a way that is fair.
Yeah, and some of these things, it must be said, are genuine mistakes. They're not attempts to cheat. When you see people who are riding around the whole island at 10 watts per kilo, I mean, you must, you know, you do think, well, you must know something's wrong, dude. If you're you know, if you're beating pro riders, you must realize something's wrong.
I've seen flyers going around over and over and over again, and it doesn't, there is really, when it comes to everybody who's on the island, and I think with the pros on the island too, it's no skin off their back. It's they don't really, well, you know what I mean? They're having fun out there riding in Zwift, and it does mess with, the only time that it gets frustrating is when it's a day where I'm looking at it and I would like to go for a jersey for the fun of it, and there's someone up there who did something that's inhumanly impossible, and it didn't get flagged, and you're kind of like, well, that's a little frustrating at the moment. But at the end of the day, I think that those guys are either somebody who put their kid on the trainer and just put this resistance way down, or they know, and I don't know, maybe they're just kind of trolling it, you know, for kicks. And I'm not too concerned about it until real race mode comes out, really.
Yeah.
Because we're all out there just kind of rolling around. And I think Zwift will take more action slowly and methodically to not, you know, cause too many ruffles too quickly.
Yeah, I agree. So listen, people can find you at twitch.tv/NathanGuerra.
Yeah, and it's Guerra.
Guerra.
Guerra is the best way to say it. Yeah, that's the Spanish background. So yeah,
GUERRA.
Yeah, and it's got a roll on the R's if you want to do it right. Otherwise, Guerra is just fine.
Nathan, the voice of Zwift, it's been an absolute delight to speak to you, and may you continue to commentate for a long time to come, because I, for one, think it's just great to listen to.
Thank you so much, Simon. I really appreciate your time.
I'm going to end this episode of the Zwiftcast with the last part of my interview with Zwift insider Steve Beckett. Now, if you're on the trainer and thinking about getting off, maybe best to think about doing just one more lap of the island. I started off asking Steve about the mountain route extension, and then we got onto some other stuff, probably best summed up as a bit of Zwift vision, some really interesting thoughts on how the platform may develop in the future. And I wouldn't be forgiven unless I pushed the opportunity I have with the Zwift staff are on the line to say when. When do we think we might get into the mountains?
After the release of the events module. So, you know, I wouldn't say beggars can't be choosers, but we've certainly got to do one thing at a time. And, you know, I think what you'll see, what you've always seen, is that when the product team do a release, it kind of always delivers. You know, John Mayfield's got a small team, but they're really well drilled, and they're working. They work stupid hours in terms of all the time and effort they put into the product. And the other thing is it's like it's not rushed out; it's really thoroughly tested. Group riding is the priority because it's accessible to 100% of the base. Then we get into the mountain extension. And I think there's a lot of confidence there, you know, from the first Witopia extension that there's demand for extensions on Witopia. We're going to need to test that course quite thoroughly before it's taken into the wild. But I'd expect it probably before, you know, on and around March time, I'd expect.
And I know you were in Long Beach recently. Go on, tell us, have you seen it?
No, at the minute there are no roads at the moment. Okay. So those roads will be modelled on a different build, on a different server. You know, it's not just about climbing, it's a descending. What the different gradients you'd look to employ. Like riding outside, like a 7% gradient is kind of a cruisy gradient, but it's still fairly toppy if you're going over 5K for most people. A lot of smart trainers don't go over, 7%. We've got to think about the group riding aspect. So you're never going to get big groups riding up a climb, but we've got to think about how people ride up together. I mean, it's really great. Like the main climb in Witopia always gathers people together. And I think a lot of it's going to be about the cosmetic side of it. Like, you know, when you get up there, it's going to provide a fantastic opportunity to look down on Witopia, right? So I think, you know, when you look at when you ride the reverse loop of Witopia, you see how beautiful it can be when you can look down on the rest of the course. So I think what the Witopia extension has proven is that the cosmetic side of it, the pixel perfect sort of gaming technology is going to be a significant part of the mountain extension.
You're going to need, I think, some visual distraction from what probably is going to be the longest climb on Zwift. And I mean, my experience of virtual riding is that long climbs do have a tendency to be a bit boring on a trainer.
Yes, and this is really interesting, this point, because, you know, before we got on this call, we were talking about the extension, and I think you and I are both united on or consistent in the fact that we were quite doubtful about the experience. And I go as far to say as that's probably stands for the majority of people, because the majority of people on Zwift came into cycling riding outdoors. Okay, so you know, the notion of an underwater tunnel is like, you know, a lot of head scratching going on there, but you know, we were proven completely wrong from the offset about how that experience translates into enjoying Zwift. And so, you know, this is where the game team have probably got their own ideas about mountains, but you know, I think it'll come down to like what is the perfect length to ride uphill for the majority of people.
I'm guessing 20 minutes. I'm guessing around 20 minutes.
Okay, well, you're welcome to guess as much as you like. But I don't have that answer. And I think the answer will only come from riding the build in test. And just like when we ride the test builds, it's about riding it solo as well as in group rides.
Is there anything big in the way of a surprise down the track? And I'm not going to press you what it might be, but, you know, tell me, is there something other than those two big things that you're looking at?
Good question. From a product point of view, not really. I mean, those two things themselves are pretty game-changing for Zwift. I think the the other things are kind of bells and whistles that we bring to the platform. I mean, that's the two ingredients. So a really rock solid kick-ass product, and then bringing the bells and whistles to Zwift. And we know that people really like the ability to engage with professional athletes. Mm. And you know, I think it's probably best. There's probably no better example to finish this sort of conversation on than Sunday's ride, right? You know, you're on that the European Sunday spin, and this wasn't by no means planned, but a Lawson Craddock turns up on the start line and he's like, I love a bit of this. He rode with us for an hour, and he bloody loved it, and then he did the next ride. So like, you put those two things together and you've got something really powerful. So a product that works, a product that works around people's busy lives, so always having things to do. And then when you get into Zwift, there's kind of loads of cool bells and whistles that you just can't get anywhere else. It's not money can't buy, right? But it's really quite special. Something that you can't get elsewhere. And that's something that we'll always be striving to deliver for our users.
And you have done so far. I think there'll be widespread agreement on that. And Steve, thank you for your time, and thank you for being so accommodating. I mean, I have to tell listeners that we have actually strayed a little bit beyond our previously agreed brief, and actually I'm very grateful for you tolerating my cheekiness in that regard. And I'm just going to push it one last question, which I think the user base will be interested in. Because the health of the company is actually of interest to us. We want Zwift to be healthy and to have revenue and to be able to bring new developments in. Has the January influx been of new users been what you were expecting? And you know, how is the overall health of the company in terms of meeting what your targets, which I'm sure you've got?
Well, look, January has been great, but if it wasn't great, then we should probably fire ourselves. But you know, the reason is that there's a lot of demand out there. So this new year, new me syndrome. So as soon as people get to Christmas, I know obviously not everyone celebrates Christmas, but December's a really busy month if you've got a family, and work, and often there's not much time to do exercise. So people become very kind of self-loathing over Christmas and the new year, and they really just can't wait to get stuck into fitness. And you know, from as far as attracting our core audience of enthusiast cyclists, we're seeing a huge amount of take up right now. It's our ability to sustain that in the coming months, which is really linked to product and inevitably linked to cold weather to bring people into Zwift. You know, that's how we drive most consideration. And then it's about our ability to keep people loving Zwift. And that's about Zwift not being a seasonal tool. It's about bang for buck, the value that it provides you as a training solution or as a fitness tool. Mm-hmm. And I think the value around Zwift is about it being almost like your best friend as a cyclist, a companion. You know, being able to nick an hour here and there is always going to be valuable. That doesn't matter if it's the middle of the summer or the depths of winter, but that the demand for that aspect is going to be driven more about what you're likely to get when you go into Zwift, whether it be that there's a load of rides to choose from or the chance to go riding with your friends. So it's as far, you know, we're stepping off a cliff, right? When we launched the business, we really didn't know how demand would map out. We don't have any reference points, no year-on-year numbers. It's very hard to forecast. So you know, we really do rely on the goodwill of the user base. But I hope that you know that goodwill is reciprocated by the staff at Zwift and that goodwill hopefully is really visible, and that, you know, that's why we are on forums, we're on social media, we're on group rides. You know, we want to be accountable, and we want to demonstrate that accountability is about listening to the user base, as well as like trying to be a user and you know, do Zwift with our users as well. So
I must say, I think that's something the company does very well, the engagement, and to see people like yourself and Eric and John actually in the forums answering people's questions, you know, can only be a good thing.
Yeah, and that's about building trust. I think, you know, there's a lot of trust amongst the community that when we deliver a product, it works. And then when we're developing a product, the consideration for the development of that product comes from our users. And that started right back from the beginning. You know, we were going to launch the business as a paid product a year ago. And we made the decision to continue as a beta product. And on the face of it, that's a very expensive decision in terms of like being able to keep people in paid jobs and run a business. But that wasn't necessarily a commercial decision. It was a product decision as well, because if you've got a very niche user base, you're going to develop a niche product. So as much about the Julian Washingtons of this world as it was about the Nathan Guerreras of this world. But the great thing about Zwift is that your Nathans and your Julians really know each other and like each other. And I don't think you get that in the real world. I don't think you get Sunday casual cyclists hanging out with your kind of top amateurs. They're two discrete audiences. But the great thing about Zwift is that you've got this homogenous user base, and everyone's very self-aware and appreciating of what everybody likes and how to talk to one another. You know, it's that for me, that's the great thing about Zwift. There's no snobbishness there, and I'd like to think that Zwift championing group rides, riding group rides, has done a lot to get rid of the angsty nature that existed in the community. And I think a lot of that angst was about maybe feeling like the people weren't being listened to, you know?
Yeah.
Because people care so passionately about it.
Mm-hmm. It's certainly been a successful tactic. And that's brought us back to where we started this interview, which has gone on much longer than I thought it would do, and has strayed into areas that obviously I've been keen to explore. But I must thank you for agreeing to answer, because it has strayed beyond the brief we agreed to talk about. But I think the thing about Zwift is, and whenever I do any of these interviews for the Zwiftcast, people love talking about Zwift, actually. People who use Zwift do love talking about Zwift. And I find that is just as much the case with Zwift staffers as it is with people from the community. So thank you very much indeed for your time, Steve, and thanks for everything you've been able to tell us. That's it, Zwifters. There is no more for now, but lots of good things planned for the next episode. Hope you enjoyed this one. Thanks for listening. And if you're on the trainer, step it up a bit.